Turn up the volume and free your mind, because this is the Humans 2.0 podcast, hosted by Mark Metry. What you feed your mind every day will shape your future. Listening to this podcast will strengthen your mind, thoughts, and beliefs. Leave behind the everyday mundane trivialities of your average human version 1.0 and meta-learn your way into becoming a human version 2.0 with a new upgraded guest in each episode. Enjoy.
How do you spend your time here on planet Earth?
So quite a lot of people tell me that I've got probably one of the most interesting jobs basically around. So on the one hand, so I'm a futurist, firstly. Timelines I work between basically are kind of 2020 and 2070. And the reason we go to 2070 is because a lot of the governments that I work with, you know, particularly some of the longer term projects that they're involved with, you know, they want a sort of 50 to 100 year view. So and when you start getting beyond 2050, things start getting a little bit crazy. Outside of that, you know, I help mentor some of the Google XPRIZE lunar teams. So next year, some of those teams are going to be landing lunar rovers on the moon. I work with Centrica. So for example, I sit on Centrica, which is one of Europe's largest energy companies. I sit on one of their technology and innovation committees. So we're building out energy, you know, energy grids sort of 2.0. We're building out distributed energy grids. I help companies like Huawei design the next five generations of smartphones and the things that come beyond. So we start talking, you know, when we start talking about what comes after the smartphone in kind of 2050, 2070, you know, we literally talk about nanomachines, synthetic biology, and turning the human into the smartphone. And then, yeah, future of transportation. You know, yesterday I was giving a presentation on the future of super yachts. I do some work with Bentley on the future of cars, future of aviation. It's crazy. You know, I can go all the way from the future of defense all the way through to the future of the workplace, where, for example, we have people in China that are being hooked up to mind-reading AIs. And occasionally I do a little bit of accountancy on the side.
Man, I love that so much, man. And yeah, dude, this is you're on the right podcast. We talk about all this stuff. But, you know, before we get into the sort of futurism thing, because I'm super interested in that, how did you kind of first get started in this future technology world in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question. So on the one hand, I was really interested in it anyway, you know, as a young kid, et cetera, et cetera. But I used to work at EMC and Atos, as well as sort of IBM, those kinds of companies. And you know, organizations typically have three levers, as I say. You know, they want to reduce risk, they want to reduce cost, and they want to grow. And I always saw the technology industry, you know, the technology industry was very, very good at automating people. You know, you'd go into a big global tier one bank and they'd say, we want you to save money. And you'd instantly be talking cloud virtualization and how many people can you take out. So I wanted to see if there was any way that you could programmatically help an organization understand what was coming next so that they could see what the next industry was, the next line of business was. So that if they were making people redundant in one part of their business, the idea was, you know, in my head, that they could move those into a new line of business. So I started having a look around to see whether or not it was programmatically possible to identify the next industries, the next product, the next generation service. And it actually is. That's it. It's not easy. You've got to join a lot of dots. But today, you know, we are actually building out quite all those next generation industries with quite a lot of partners.
That's really interesting, man. So what exactly lies for us in the future? And I want to take this in the context of like the 2020s, like the next couple years we're about to enter into. I'm going to tell you what I think, and then I want you to tell me how I'm wrong and what's up, okay? I think you know, Google's been working a lot on self-driving cars. And I think in the 2020s, we're going to start seeing those a lot more. I think virtual and augmented reality, we're going to be seeing them a lot more. I think VR is starting out with, you know, some enterprise applications right now. And I think as it gets better and more startups get involved, I think like the ultimate display technology is going to be like some kind of mixed reality device that like goes to AR and then VR, you know, something like that. And then I think 5G, once the networks start rolling that out, I think that'll connect us and bring us up to speed and allow so many more things to be possible. I think the Internet of Things is going to start taking place, and that's going to converge with all sorts of different things like AI. And then Amazon's going to come out with like a smart fridge that's going to like order your beers every Tuesday because it knows the rate in which you're at. And I think there's a bunch of other things. I think there's things going on in the medical field, different research applications going on, different biotechnology things going on. But what lies for us humans in the next few years and kind of what we'll see throughout the 2020s?
Yeah, so if we take it up to a high level, you've got two things, because we've got a huge amount of different technology basically that we can leverage today. But while we're turning a lot of things that were science fiction into science fact, so giving you a couple of examples there, deflector shields. You know, British Aerospace, if you fire a laser at the upper part of the atmosphere, you can turn the atmosphere into something called the Fermi lens, which is basically a deflector shield. If we look at tractor beams, then we've got the University of New York, which might be quite close to you, or the University of Bristol, that are now levitating and moving different objects around literally in a tractor beam. You know, and you can go and look on YouTube and all that kind of stuff, and you can see them for yourself. You can even make one, 3D print one off. When we start thinking about the things that used to be science fact, you know, science fiction, they're increasingly science fact. So technology, I always say, is this rocket ship. Yeah, it moves at such an incredibly fast pace that we're never ever going to be able to keep up with the bleeding edge, you know, from a corporate perspective or from a societal perspective. So from a societal perspective, you have organizations basically that kind of have the network effect. So if Google suddenly produces a very, very powerful artificial intelligence, and they put it into the heart of their Google Compute platform, for example, you can suddenly, as an individual in Africa, you can suddenly buy that platform or buy access to that platform for cents on the dollar with your credit card or with your cryptocurrency, if you're that way inclined. So that's one way that we can get some of this advanced technology, let's say, out into the marketplace very, very quickly. But outside of that, you've got cultural adoption. And just because we can do some of these things today doesn't necessarily mean that society is going to embrace it. So take self-driving cars. You know, I speak to a lot of people that say they're never, ever going to get into one. But yeah, as you mentioned, you know, 2019, 2020, you're going to see Ford. I mean, we've already got Waymo rolling out a couple of hundred self-driving cars down in Arizona. Self-driving cars as a good example, those are going to be provided to us. Generally in the West first, so, you know, North America and parts of Europe, China following and Singapore following and Dubai following. But those are going to be provided by the organizations themselves, manufacturers themselves as a service. So we'll certainly have access to them via that route. You know, General Motors and Ford will roll out thousands of self-driving cars kind of come 2021. Again, sort of, you know, Europe and North America centric, because that's where they start and it sort of filters down from there. So as I say, you know, we've got all of these crazy technologies. You know, giving you another crazy technology, you know, today, if you're born with an inherited genetic condition, you know, you go into the NHS or you go into the US medical system, and they will tell you, you know, you've got 20 years to live, and you know it's going to be a very, very painful 20 years, and then at the end of that 20 years, you're just going to die. You know, traditionally, everything that we know today basically tells us that that's going to happen. You know, you have an inherited medical condition, 20 years down the line, you're going to die. Or at least, you know, you might be able to extend it for 30 years, you know, you're going to have a short life. Last year over in the UK, we did an in vivo gene editing program with a guy who had Hunter's syndrome and edited the inherited genetic syndrome straight out of him with gene editing tools. That's where we are with technology today, and we're even further along than that. So the biggest, you know, when we talk about the change, the effect that technology has on society, you've got these bottlenecks. Regulators will slow it down. If a regulator says you can't use a driving car on the roads, you're not going to ever get in one. You've got cultural bias. So you know, you've got generational bias as well. So, you know, older people adopt things at a slower rate than younger people. You have network effects, you know, just like I said with Google, you stick a powerful AI into the middle of Google and suddenly, what, 2 billion, 3 billion people on the planet have access to it. So there's all these sort of different things that slow down technology adoption or speed it up. If you have a look at electric vehicles, for example, you know, we've got Germany, France, Italy, China and India that are banning the sale of combustion engines from around 2030 to 2040. So if you live in those countries and 3.2 billion people do, and say 2030, 2040, you want to go and buy a diesel car, you can't. So all of a sudden, tough. Yeah. So all of, and again, all of a sudden, you're driving an electric car. So then the only thing that is available is an electric car. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, the adoption of electric cars is speeded up. Mm-hmm. So, certainly in the near term, anything really that goes into the big hyperscale data center companies, platforms, you know, like Google, like Microsoft, like AWS, like Baidu, like Tencent, SoftBank, and Alibaba over in APJ, we'll have access to all of that sort of stuff. So whether it's AR, whether it's VR, whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's blockchain-based stuff. But outside of that, anything that goes into those platforms, we're then going to rely on larger corporations, say like, you know, Ford, like GM, and other companies to start rolling some of these things out for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. So I had
another intro show,
and we were kind of talking about the whole regulatory thing on how sometimes it's bad. I want to know your thoughts on, if you've ever given any thought, on how really governments and governing structures will change. So, like, is the government going to start regulating cryptocurrency? I mean, a lot of them have. And this futurist that I was talking to, he brought up this point, and he says that he thinks the future governments, the future nations of the world, are going to be corporations. And I don't know what to think about that. It's seemingly shown, just like you said, like you have these handful of these organizations, Alibaba, Amazon, that seems like they're really pushing the way. You know, maybe they can come out with, you know, different nations. They might start buying, you know, the government might go bankrupt. They could start buying out land. I don't know. I don't want to get into like any like conspiracy theories or anything like that, but just where do you see the future of governance, you know, intertwining with technology, if at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the cynics basically could say that actually the corporations could take over. Yeah, I mean, if you have a look at the US government, I mean, what, you're a couple of $1 trillion in debt. You could have Apple come in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could have Apple come in, basically do a sort of, you know, the government does a bond sale, Apple goes and buys it, then owns most of the US government. And then all of a sudden, you know, they suddenly start setting US policy on stuff, you know, healthcare and, you know, Android, you know, whatever, yeah. Some of these organizations basically are getting incredibly huge. You know, when you have a look at the top 10 organizations in the world now by market capitalization, the majority of them are technology companies, and they're only getting bigger. Increasingly, all these technology organizations are digital, which means that increasingly, as other industries become increasingly digital, the boundaries between industries are also dissolving. So, you know, Google basically was a search company. Suddenly they're moving into payments. They can move into insurance. They can move into healthcare. They can move into automotive. They can move into, you name it. Same with Apple, same with AWS. You know, Amazon basically was a retailer, started moving into cloud. Now they're in cloud, they can move into IoT. They can start moving into AI. They get into AI and they start getting into every single organization on the planet. They suddenly, their AI Alexa suddenly becomes the CEO or the manager of a company. And we've already got, well, you know, we've already got AIs on Wall Street, for example, with a company like Ada. If your listeners want to look them up, fully autonomous hedge fund on Wall Street, world's first distributed autonomous organization. So you've actually got a couple of plays you could have here. In the future, you could have a sovereign government, as we do today, albeit slightly more modern and more transformed. You could have a corporation that heads everything up, but you're going to end up having a struggle between East and West. Or you could have a fully autonomous agent, whether it's an artificial intelligence or something like DAO, that is running a country. There is no reason why today we couldn't actually fully automate most of what government does. If you think about, you know, it's a demand and supply situation, whether it's taxes, you know, whether it's money, whether it's the provision of social welfare and all these kinds of bits and bobs. Personally, I think the sovereign government space is still going to win out, simply because that's the structure that we've been used to for thousands of years. But that doesn't necessarily mean that large multinationals aren't going to play a more integral role, basically, in helping to set policy, drive policy. You know, look at artificial intelligence. You know, Silicon Valley, where he continually says, you know, fund us and support us, US government, but don't regulate us.
You know? Very interesting. Matthew, have you heard of the term singularity?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, the singularity is basically this moment where any life living before the singularity hits or happens, so to speak, will not be able to recognize the other side of that line. So I think it's the first singularity is coined by Kevin Kelly, Wired Magazine. He says the first singularity is the emergence of language and how it did to like our mental operating system.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've spoken to some people on it. I've read some stuff online, and, you know, there's this guy named Ray Kurzweil. And he's basically said that he thinks there's going to be a technological singularity based on exponential technologies in the year 2045, 2050, something around there. And basically it's when we fully merge with technology, humans become like immortal. We're not bound by our biological hardware. We've like merged in with AI. Have you given that any thought, or you know, what are your ideas around that?
Yeah, so I've given it a little bit of thought simply because it keeps coming up. I think the term singularity basically is a little bit, it's on the one hand, it's prominent because it puts a line in the sand when, as a biological human, we start merging with technology. Now, from the technology perspective, you know, a lot of people typically think that it's, say, inorganic technology. You know, things that we have today, you know, silicon-based tech, you know, that kind of stuff. But that technology increasingly can also be biological. So, for example, about 2 months ago, we created the world's first biocomputer in an E. coli bacteria. So when we actually have a look at technology and where we are today, you know, the systems that we use today are based on silicon. In 2020, we have quantum computers coming through, which are based on quantum mechanics. However, straight up the back of those, basically, we've got neuromorphic computing, which are self-learning computers that will pack all the power of today's largest supercomputers onto a fingernail. Last year we created in the University of Manchester the world's first blueprint for a DNA computer. So a DNA computing system makes a quantum computer, bearing in mind that a quantum computer is 100 million times faster than a logic-based computer, look like a rock. Because a DNA computer, if you throw a billion problems at it at once, it will just replicate itself up and collapse itself down once it's done. In addition to that, last year we produced the first chemical computer where we used chemicals to send a text message. Now, if you create a chemical computer, you can turn a human into a computer. If you can turn a bacteria into a biocomputer, you can turn a human into a computer. In addition to that, basically, we have photonic computing coming through. We have liquid computing. So last year, one of the US universities created the world's first liquid transistor. So, you know, imagine basically taking a glass of water and turning it into a computer. Fast forward that in the sort of terms of the terms of futurist, what happens if you can turn the world's planetary oceans into a supercomputer? The technology that we sort of think of today as merging with a human, it's probably not going to be the stuff that we are used to today. It'll be biological-based circuitry, chemical-based circuitry, It'll be photonics. It'll be whatever it happens to be. But in terms of the timeline, one of the biggest issues that we actually have there is if you have a look at the dates, the lines in the sand of 2045 and 2047, because that's what SoftBank's CEO conveniently said. The biggest problem that we're going to have with the singularity isn't necessarily that we won't have the technological capability to turn a person into a, say, a computing platform or augment them or enhance them with technology, whatever those technologies sort of are and whatever they end up doing. It's going to be the regulators. I mean, you know, you imagine the US regulator, basically, if, say, for example, Ray Kurzweil goes up to the US regulator and goes, hey, what I'd like to do is I'd like to genetically re-engineer this human so that we turn them into a biological computing platform and allow them to telepathically link up, basically, with a whole bunch of other people who have a hive mind and. Do you really see the US regulators going, hey, no problem, just do that? So actually, even though we will likely have the technological capability, basically, to turn, someone into something interesting, you know, take, for example, the neural lace. The neural lace is a nano-electronic injectable or a electronic nano-injectable device that fits over the cerebral cortex. And we've done this with rats. But a neural lace will convert biological synapse signals into digital binary signals that computers can understand. So you can now start interfacing and linking in with an AI. Mm. So we've already demonstrated that on a living organism about 2 years ago. We've already created hive minds between rats. We've already created telepathic links between humans about 3 years ago. I think that one's up at Harvard or Stanford. So even if you look at that sort of line in the sand. In 2015, we had hive mind, biological hive minds at a very basic level, human-to-human telepathy. We've got AIs, basically, that mind read. DARPA in the US, for the US DOD, actually uploaded knowledge to a bunch of people about 3 years ago. So they taught a bunch of people how to fly F-35s that had never flown. So if you think that's where we were 3 years ago, and you now fast forward 30 years, of course we're going to be able to turn the human basically into a piece of technology. But the regulators are the people who are going to go, no. So it'll be slow.
Yeah.
Wow, man. And then we'll rely on the hackers.
That's super interesting. Yeah, that's awesome. So Matthew, I want to get your vision, a snapshot of your mind of what the average person will go about life in like 2040. You know, I'm just interested to hear like what you think, practically speaking, the average person you can expect. Like I can, like if you asked me to do that right now, I'd say everyone has a mobile computer in their pocket. Some of them have voice assistants on their headphones. We have like this autonomous Uber sort of fleet that can take you anywhere you want to. You can deliver food with a touch of your button on your phone. You can talk to anybody in the world. So what is really like the practical consumer going to see in like in the year 2040, you know, something futuristic enough out there?
Yeah, sure. So there's actually a lot basically we could do. Again, you know, a lot of the different things and a lot of the different capabilities and a lot of the different technologies advance and get adopted at different rates. But giving you an example, it's more than likely basically you'll be able to buy DIY genetic engineering kits basically off the web. Reason being, you can already do it today. When we start talking about things like food production, you know, whether it's the rise of vertical farms, whether it's the rise of clean meat and bioreactors. For example, you know, if you're living in a village, if you're living in Timbuktu, or if you're living in New York, why do you need traditional agriculture? Vertical farms, organizations like AeroFarms, Spicy and Plenty, can produce anywhere between 150 and 390 times the yield of a traditional farm today, let alone in the future. We have, if you want to produce clean meat using a bioreactor and stem cells, then you can create meat without the animals. So we can, again, already do that today. China just bought $300 million of that. And that's, you know, everything from fillet steak all the way through to chicken and turkey and all these kinds of things. So if you think about food, there is no reason basically for anybody on the planet basically to go hungry. So, you know, should we say that we kind of solve food? Even down to fish farming, you know, fish farming is a weird one. If you take artificial intelligence, an underwater drone, machine vision, lasers and cameras, and you stick that into a single product, you've got something called Stingray. You drop that drone basically into a tank of fish, and it will zap all the sea lice basically off of salmon. So you no longer need pesticides or chemicals and all these kinds of things, or antibiotics for the fish. So this is kind of, these are where some of the sort of weirder technologies, when you start combining them together, produce something interesting. So food, you know, technically, you could actually have it solved. You could also move food production onto your desktop. So, you know, today you can buy things like a chef jet for about $1,500 and it will print off food. In 20 years' time, those things will be cheaper, faster, better. If you use something like a 3D bioprinter, for example, even if we ignore bioreactors, today you can literally steal something out of healthcare. You can take a 3D bioprinter that is used to print artificial human skin, kidneys, bone, cartilage, and all this kind of stuff. You could 3D print yourself a fillet steak. So you're just printing a different type of tissue. Transportation will take quite a long time to switch, but the obvious answer there I always give to the future of transportation is take out the operator, you know, whether it's cars, trucks, aircraft, cargo ships, all that kind of stuff, rockets. So take out the operator, swap in electric batteries, swap in electric batteries, and there you go. And then provide it all as a service. Change the form factors. You know, if we have a look at cars today, one of the surprising things, you know, I always sort of try to point out to people is the car is dying. Because if we look at self-driving cars, if I take out the brake pedals, the dashboard, and the steering wheel, are you in a car or are you in a pod? Death of the car. So companies like Audi and Toyota are already preparing themselves for the death of the car. You know, Audi has the long distance lounge. Toyota has, basically, its sort of e-platform concept. So transportation suddenly becomes more, you know, is on demand. It's generally going to be electric because while it still takes time to switch, you know, we should have a lot of the infrastructure by then. Self-driving fleets basically will be much more commonplace, particularly within cities. So that's transportation. When we have a look at things like education, which is a big topic at the moment, you'll have more adaptive learning systems. So, for example, we all learn differently. So artificial intelligence combined with machine vision will be able to understand how children are learning, how to get the best out of them, and then you can end up with creative AIs automatically on the fly creating different styles of content for them to consume to help them learn faster and better. And that's without mind uploading or, you know, knowledge uploading, that sort of stuff. We've got, you know, when we start having a look at construction, so the houses that we could actually live in, you know, if you go to Ukraine, if you go to Dubai, if you go to California, we're already 3D printing at a small scale houses. So the homes that you could live in, not only would they be connected, but they could also be 3D printed. In terms of energy, you know, we've seen $3.9 trillion flow into the renewable energy market over the past number of years. So it's likely that your home is increasingly going to be powered by renewables. If your home is powered by renewables, you can simply start taking yourself off the grid. You can use tied grid storage or microgrids and just disconnect yourself. So suddenly energy becomes cheaper. From a healthcare perspective, 3D printed organs basically will probably start being available commercially. So if you have a heart attack, if you have a whole range of different conditions, you know, if you get hit by a car, for example, not that we want anyone to get hit by a car, because we don't want the number of your listeners basically to reduce. So stay safe, guys. It's very likely that, you know, you'll have either a heart or certainly some form of organ or bone printed off. So again, healthcare changes. You know, when we have a look at stem cell technology, that's advancing at a crazy rate. We had someone the other day, basically out of Israel, use stem cells to grow a bone and grow teeth. Yeah. From a dentist's perspective, you know, you think if you have a cavity today, you go to the dentist, they put in an amalgam filling, 10 to 20 years down the line, it cracks. We have the University of Nottingham that have developed a metamaterial. So you swap that amalgam for a metamaterial, and all of a sudden you go to the dentist, just as you do today. They replace, they put a metamaterial basically into your cavity, and it regrows your tooth. Robotics. You know, China just rolled out robot dentists, which actually perform surgery on a, they put two teeth basically into this very brave woman in China. So, you know, we started in healthcare, we start talking about the rise of advanced robotic systems. You know, whether it's neurosurgery systems or whether it's things like the Da Vinci system today. So there's lots will change, but the speed at which different things come through will be affected by, you know, culture, cost, accessibility. You know, I mean, giving you a, sort of another example, the democratization of healthcare. If your listeners take their smartphone today and put their smartphone on their chest, with the right app, they can tell whether they have arrhythmia. If you talk into your smartphone, the smartphone using artificial intelligence can now start telling whether or not you are ill or getting ill. If you use the camera on your smartphone and hold it up in front of you so you look like you're taking a selfie, it can tell you whether or not you have pancreatic cancer. And the craziness goes on.
Jeez. That was beautiful, man. That was just straight up music to my ears. Yeah. Matthew, before I ask my final question, where can these people find you online?
The best place to find me online is I blog, and I generally bore people through my blog. So www.fanaticalfuturist.com. I also run the 311 Institute. So if anyone has any ideas of what the future might hold that are alternative to my own, happy to be quizzed and happy to be sort of put in my place. But so far, even the chaps at MIT haven't managed to prove me wrong. But yeah, fanaticalfuturist.com. I post there every day. There's a few thousand articles on emerging technology and the general craziness that is my world.
Sounds awesome, man. I'll leave all those links down below. Yeah. So Matthew, you know, with all this change, all the different variables in the future, are there any like key principles, any North Stars that you kind of hold up as to kind of keep in mind about all this technology and all about this future?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my biggest focuses, basically, is technology itself is a tool. It's a blank canvas. You know, take artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence can do great good or it can do great good. It's humans that typically give technology a bias. You know, today, basically, we see more countries spending more money basically on military, you know, so whether it's hypersonic weapons, autonomous cruise missiles, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know, space-based weapon systems. And I always say, if you're going to, you know, technology today is increasingly powerful. The cost of using it, operating it, and scaling those technologies is also increasingly cheap. It's driving to zero. But if you are going to do something with technology, do good. Don't do evil. Because the technologies that we have today, you know, we will eventually be able to cure cancer. We've already created a cancer vaccine, for heaven's sake, you know, both in China and in the US. There are a huge number of things that we can do to help mankind. If you take, for example, even graphene, you know, graphene oxide membranes, that will desalinate any water on the planet. You know, you can drink raw sewage using that. So all of a sudden, water scarcity starts going away. You know, renewables basically suddenly start giving energy and electricity basically to everybody on the planet. Space-based internet systems will, you know, from the likes of SpaceX, Virgin and Qualcomm, those kinds of guys, will connect up the last 3.5 billion people on the planet. So all of a sudden, you know, we have this opportunity to do great things as a human species. So let's focus on the good. Let's strive to do good. And if people want to do bad stuff, let's go and send them off to the moon.
I love it so much, Matthew. I totally forgot to mention this is the beginning of the podcast. But basically at the end, I asked my guest to leave the audience with a self-inquisitive question that they can kind of ask themselves throughout the day. I'd love it if you could ask my artist a question, if you have one.
Yeah. So ask a thoughtful question of themselves. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one. So there's quite a couple. I typically focus basically on trying to motivate individuals. I mean, if you take, for example, automation, you know, the rise of automation, we're all going to end up having to do different things and all that kind of stuff. Put me on the spot now. That's the only part of it I'm struggling with.
It's all right, man. The power of editing.
Yeah.
Technology.
just as well. I suppose basically, if I was going to get the audience basically to think about anything, I would actually suggest that they look into their own lives, and they look into their lives basically of their children, basically of their friends, basically, and how those are going to be transformed over the next, you know, 2-3 decades. You know. If, for example, you have young children, how are you going to educate them? Today, we already see a huge amount of churn in the workforce. You know, we see a huge amount of automation already coming through. So think about how you're educating your children. Make sure that they are creative, entrepreneurship. You know, there is no such thing as a stupid question as far as children should be concerned. Also, look out for each other. You know, what are you doing for your local community? What are you doing for your local man? When you have a look at things like privacy, we already have mind-reading AIs. Privacy is going to become increasingly rare. And as individuals, you either accept that or you start fighting back and you start changing the system. So I would actually get them to explore. What have they done today, basically, to go out and explore and learn new things, basically, and try and change the status quo and better their lives and better the lives, basically, of their families, their children, their relatives, basically, and the people around them?
I love that question, man. That's absolutely beautiful. And Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the Humans 2.0 podcast. You are, without a doubt, a human 2.0, my friend. You're helping build this technologically enabled world. I love it. I love it so much. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening. This has been your host, Mark Metry.